Cultivate Simple, episode 31, Five Things.
Five.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. This is episode 31, and today we're going to be not giving you any substance whatsoever. It's basically just going to be all fluff. And so if you're looking for a topic or looking for an hour that will enrich your life, then you might want to go pick up a book or something. We were trying to think of a fun topic for this week, or just a topic in general, and
we're working on getting some interviews
right
in line, but
we wanted
spring, and a lot of people we know are as busy as we are, so
right. We wanted to do something a little bit fun too, because we always, you know, it's like topic or interview or topic or interview or topic or interview. So we kind of came up with this idea of five things. So one of the things that we always try to do, and I don't know that we try to do it consciously, I just think this is kind of our personality, but we're always learning new things, and we're always just really interested in finding out ideas about new topics, or and we're always discussing things.
We're
Very curious. That's a good way to put it. Always reading books. Well, Susie's always reading books and telling me about them.
you learn by osmosis.
That's right. but we wanted to just we started this discussion about, you know, learning new things and actually setting out to learn new things and five things that we want to learn. And I said, well, that would be a fun show topic. Would just be, you know, me pick out five things and talk about them, and you pick out five things and talk about them. And then you came up with the idea of us trying to guess each other's five things, which is actually proving to be a lot more difficult than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I know.
But we'll see how we do in that. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about a couple other things. We're actually going to try and give you a little bit of substance up front so that you can get a little bit of value out of this show instead of us just talking about ourselves. So the first thing we can do is, what's for dinner? But actually, instead of what's for dinner, what are we drinking right now? What deliciousness have you made for us?
Warm eggnog.
But don't downplay it. Tell the whole story.
So I'll tell you how I made it. I put milk in a pan probably about 2 hours ago, actually, to steep with some sweet cinnamon sticks, a vanilla bean, and some cardamom pods. And then I let that warm that up and let it steep for a while. And then I always add to our hot beverages, I always add a little bit of gelatin, like unflavored gelatin. I buy the Great Lakes brand, which is a pasture gelatin. That's good for your skin, your ligaments. It's got some protein in it. It's all around, you know, it helps your liver. It's an all around great thing to add. So, so I add that to most of the hot beverages that we drink. But after steeping the milk, then I put an egg yolk in a cup, put a little bit of maple syrup in it, and I whisked it up. And then I put ladled a little bit of hot milk in there, and, you know, whisked it up so it didn't cook the egg. And then I poured the rest of the milk in, and then I made maple nutmeg whipped cream to put on the top. So one of the good things about having raw milk from the farm is you've always got cream, because it's non-homogenized, so it, you know, separates. So I'm always skimming the cream off of milk and making butter, and we enjoy whipped cream quite frequently. And we tend to follow kind of the Weston A. Price ideology, I guess, on eating. And so he talks about how pastured cream is super good for you, particularly this time of year. It's just bright yellow. So we try to make sure we're getting a lot of delicious cream in our diet. And what a better way than with nutmeg, which I think we talked about last week, didn't we, on the podcast? A little bit of nutmeg, cinnamon. Cinnamon's really good for you as well. Vanilla beans, good for helping you sleep. So it's a good nighttime kind of beverage. So, yeah. Pastured egg yolk, lots of biotin, an all-around a very nourishing beverage to drink in the evening.
There you go. And that's not really what's
bad. It doesn't taste too bad either.
No, it's pretty darn good as we both paused to drink. Mm-hmm. That's why I wanted you to talk about it so I could catch up and actually drink mine while it was still warm. But yeah, it's amazing in the past couple weeks since here in Maine, we actually had a spring and it hasn't really warmed up until the past couple weeks. And now the grass has just been coming out and the difference in the milk the past couple mm-hmm. weeks. And we even talked to the farmer that we get the milk from and we're just saying, I mean, the color of it, first of all, like you mm-hmm. said, the cream is yellow, but just bright yellow. It almost looks, it's the color of butter you buy in the store, like yeah. fake, you know, that yellow, they add yellow like color margarine. To it, obviously.
Yeah, because butter in the store is white, margarine's right. yellow.
And, but this, yeah, the cream is completely yellow. And
when you make butter, it's just almost orange. It's so mm-hmm. yellow.
And then the milk just has a completely different taste. Mm-hmm. It tastes very sweet and almost has like a grassy flavor yeah, to it.
It's really, really good this time of year.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting to see that change as the cows, mm-hmm. you know, get back out on the pasture and start eating green grass and just how much better the milk is. So yet another thing to like about drinking real milk.
That's right.
Besides the fact that we have whipped cream on all of our hot beverages and that's they're right. all absolutely delicious.
Can't complain about that.
Ah, that is good. I need to finish that up as we talk, so I'm going to set it here in front of me so I don't forget about it. So the next thing we're going to talk about is the books of the week. Now we're just going to kind of jump into it because these don't really have, well, I mean, I don't know, they may have something to do with our topic, but these are more just books that you've been reading and mm-hmm. we've...
Oh, I should mention the pig book I read too.
Oh, yeah.
Let me go grab that so I make sure I get the title right.
Yeah, this past couple weeks as we've been... venturing out into new things, into pigs and different things. We've been purchasing a lot of books and getting book recommendations from people. And so this week is kind of an interesting one because the three books really don't go together. The first one is about, it's called Living with Pigs. Mm-hmm. Susie just went and grabbed it and it's yeah. actually a great book.
It's a great primer. It really mm-hmm. is. It's not too in-depth. It's kind of, hey, if you want to get some pigs and raise them in your... you know, in your backyard or whatever, you know, get this book. It's great. It has lots of wonderful pictures. It's just like a quick, you know, get your feet wet kind of a book, which is really great. There was actually a recommendation in here for a book that was built, that was written in the 1880s.
I believe. Yeah.
Which I think I may have purchased a copy of that today because I really yeah. like the old livestock.
I got the shipping confirmation for it.
I really like the old livestock books like that back before the age of feed stores and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to read about how people maintained healthy animals because I'm really interested in that kind of thing.
And not that we're against feed stores. We should say that.
No, I mean, I buy chicken feed at the feed store and it's convenient.
It just seems like, so let me interject
it's
there.
It's kind of like pet kibble to me.
Right.
So
when I bought a book about raising rabbits, and it was very, you know, you don't need to, and you shouldn't pasture your rabbits because it'll just cause all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. Which I can see some of the logic in that, and you can kind of see the reasoning behind it. But in the same way, it's just seemed like it was more of an advertisement for just buying pellets and keeping your rabbits in mm-hmm. cages, which, you know. Millions of people do that, and it's definitely one way to raise rabbits,
right.
but it's not necessarily the way we wanted to try. Mm-hmm. So it was just, but then you said that, which is the story books.
Stories guide yeah. books. I never buy those because I feel like they're just, it's just status quo, and mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. So, and if I wanted to do that, I would, you know, you don't necessarily need a book that tells right. you how to do it because it's, you know, everybody does it kind of that way. So, yeah, I'm not big on books like that that I feel like are sponsored by the Purina, essentially, mm-hmm. you know. So they tell you, they almost scare you into not trying to do things that are out of the ordinary and things that have been done for, you know, the last thousands of years instead of just the last 50. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, but this book, Living with Pigs, is really great. I liked it a lot. There are a couple good tips. Most of the information that I already knew, I like some of the breed pictures in here, and he talks about butchering, and, you know, that's something we're probably going to try to do this fall. So, yeah, it's a good little, if you're interested in getting pigs, it's a good one. And I'll let you know about the other one that I purchased, the old one. But I'm really kind of excited to read that. Some of the reviews I've read about it. One lady said that her and her husband have been following his feeding recommendations and have always just had great success with it. And essentially it's feeding like barley and oats and then garden scraps and stuff. So I'm really interested to read that.
And if you're new to the podcast, just, you know, if this is your first time, we got two pigs and they've been rooting up the garden.
Shoats, as the proper term is.
Mm-hmm, shoats.
We like to call them piggies, though.
Yeah. they've been... We want to expand out the garden that we have. And in part of the garden, you had it planted in cover crop.
Right. Which... I had a fall cover crop that I planted last. I think it was... I planted it a little late. Mm-hmm. But it was in October sometime. And it's overwintered rye and vetch, hairy vetch. And then in the fall, there's clover and peas that grow up too. But those winter kill. So yeah, so this stuff is crazy. And you can wait until the seed heads form and the vetch starts to bloom. And last year, we grew it. I've grown it for many years. And then you just mow it off, cut it off with clippers. Last year, I used a scy to cut it because it's pretty tall. And that worked really well. And if you cut it at the right time, it essentially just, it dies because all the energy is going into making seeds. So, you know, it uses a lot from the roots. So, I mean, you have to time it right. But this year, I thought, oh, I'm going to put the pigs in there because I was reading that rye and vetch are very high quality pasture for pigs because there's a really good like protein content in it. So we put them in there and they just went to town. They're just loving the rye, and the rye is just starting to put up some seed heads, which they can eat and, you know, harness some nutrients from that as well. So they're just loving it, and they're doing a fantastic job of working it in. And I'm hoping to maybe plant some sweet potatoes or something in that spot probably next week or in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So we're using them basically as plows to expand the garden area
into... and to deal with some noxious weeds that we had. We have some quack grass that's overtaking the old asparagus bed in other parts of the garden, and they're supposed to be really good at managing that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It's all a grand experiment, and we end up with bacon. So, you know, either way we win.
one of the things that was in that book that I know that we both read it and kind of laughed was he talked about how raising pigs was a lot more difficult before the invention of the electric fence. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely true. I mean, I could definitely see how that would be.
Pigs need strong fences for sure.
Yeah. And they are, because they're just little bulldozers. They're actually quite amazing. But yeah, we purchased an electric fence specifically for pigs from Premier.
Premier One Supplies, which they're highly recommend their fencing. Mm-hmm. Their poultry net, Electronet poultry fences are fantastic. And the pig fence, highly recommend if you have pigs, go ahead and spend the money and get the pig fence. That's actually half the price of the poultry fence. But it's really stout and really sturdy. So highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Love, love, love these fences. I'll probably, if it wasn't on back order, I'd probably buy a couple more of the pig fences. So.
And they're really easily movable. Mm-hmm. So we're planning on moving them to a different part of the garden to till up some weeds to actually do bed prep for
my potatoes,
planting potatoes. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, the pigs, so far the pig experiment has been a grand success. We have had no complaints whatsoever. I need to build a trough for them because we're just using kind of
it's the bottom of a chicken feeder.
Yeah, so it's like a saucer.
So it's a huge saucer, almost as big as like a trash can lid, kind of.
But the pigs like to stand in their bowl while they eat. Yeah. So that hasn't worked out so well. Tonight they spilled kind of half their food on the ground.
Which then they proceeded to kind of eat. Right. But, you know, they had a bunch of kefir in there, so it kind of mixed with the dirt, and now there's right. a big it's mud puddle just not right a there.
Good
so.
Thing. But so yeah, we need to. That's the next project on the list mm-hmm. is to build them a trough. But pigs are fun they're hilarious.
Them. So they are pretty funny, and it took a couple touches of the fence with their noses and a couple of yelps, and they definitely respect the fence. Yeah. It's quite amazing to watch. And when I'm out there working, they're out running along the fence, you know, along where I'm walking and working and grunting and oinking. And they're really, really funny. Great garden companions. They're right back there with me. And since we have them pastured on a big piece of land, they don't, you know, they don't stink. They don't mm-hmm. get that, you know, people always say, oh, pigs stink. But mm-hmm. you give them some space and you feed them well.
And I think that's a big part of it, because the first night that we got them,
they smelled, they stuck.
They were being fed mainly pellets at the, you know, mm-hmm. pig pellets at the farm that we got them from. And yeah, they're, I don't want to be gross, but their poo was nasty looking and smelling. And then as soon as, you know, we turned them out on pasture and started feeding them, I mean, you've been cooking some nice meals for those pigs.
Oh, they're getting some delicious food.
But
it's going to translate into some delicious bacon.
It's interesting. It's just interesting. And it's the same thing with the pets.
It's the same thing with the dogs and the cats when we switched them to a raw diet. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Because Lucy's droppings now, it's
really... We call them sweet potatoes.
Yeah. It's really weird, though. But ever since we switched her to a raw diet, or whenever she's eating, you can tell that that's mainly what she's getting is just, you know... the meat and the eggs and that type of thing. Her droppings are like white and they're almost like chalky.
It's from the bones.
Yeah.
She eats a lot of bones.
And so...
And eggshells.
But they
stuff.
Don't stink. No. It doesn't stink. It's really... It's amazing.
And they're gone in like 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah. They just disintegrate and that's it. Her poop don't stink. Anyway. So what other books? What other books do you have?
And so I'm reading Eating on the Wild Side, which I was contacted by the author of this book. She thought that it kind of would go along with what my blog talks about, and she was right. It's a phenomenal book, and I'm going to do a post about this on my blog. I have pictures of her garden. I think I mentioned this book.
And you're going to have a copy to give away, aren't you?
But phenomenal book. It's all about eating, choosing the best foods that have the most nutrients in them. So choosing vegetables for nutrient density. And she in here, she gives specific variety recommendations, you know, as far as onions. So if you grow them in your garden, you can choose these varieties. I'm in the chapter on tomatoes right now. And, you know, the potato one was really interesting. And yeah, fabulous, particularly if you're a gardener, because she gives recommendations. She is a gardener to grow them yourself. So. And I also have this book called Manage Your Day-to-Day. Build your routine, find your focus, and sharpen your creative mind. And this is not my typical book. I don't usually read, like,
self-help.
Getting things done and self-help and that kind of stuff. But there's this blog that I read called Brain Pickings. It's another blog that's kind of a donation. They do everything by donations, no ads. And it's a fabulous resource, and I really love what they do. And they highly recommended this book. And it was, I don't know, like $5 or $7 or something like that. So I bought it. And so far, I've read the first chapter. And it really, really, really is great. It just gives you a lot of good tips on, you know, I'm a fairly good time manager. But I can, you know, I think you can always, there are always ways to improve. So
sure.
I've only read a little bit of this book. But so far, the first chapter is well worth the price of the book. And I'm looking forward to this other chapter that I read a couple excerpts from in the blog post that was really phenomenal. So yeah, if you're looking forward to, or if you're looking to build a better routine, get more out of your time, be able to do more in your days, this is particularly good, especially if you're creative and kind of your self-employed work from home, but not necessarily just for that. Even if you work in an environment, I think it gives a lot of good tips about being able to implement these ideas in your work environment. So
we will put links to all of those books in the show notes, which you can find at cultivatesimple.com. And if you do any shopping on Amazon at any time during the day for any product, make sure that you come back over to cultivatesimple.com or to chiotesrun.com and click on one of the books in the sidebar. Right.
And that's takes one of the ways I support Brain Pickings, is I click through their links and buy books.
And that takes you to Amazon and puts a little affiliate code link cookie on your browser. And then for the next 24 hours, anything you purchase, we get a small percentage of. And that helps to support the podcast and the blog and to pay some of the bills associated with that. So next thing we're going to go into is our five things.
Are we going to guess?
Yeah, well, we didn't really set up any rules. So how do we do this? I have a list over here of the five things I'd like to learn, and then there are three that are, two of them that are work-related, which I knew that you wouldn't guess, so I didn't put them in, like, the main list. And they're probably not even worth talking about on the show, because probably three people will understand what I'm talking about. There's another one that might make the list, but I only have two for you. I can only figure
Let's start with you. So let me guess.
Okay, you guess, and I will tell you.
I'm going to guess you're going to do something about woodworking.
I didn't put that on the list.
I'm surprised.
But
I'm really surprised.
That could be on the list.
You're going to change your list.
That could be on the list. That could be on the list. I could. That's the problem with woodworking.
Is you need tools.
Is that you need tools. And my kind of philosophy on tools is that if you're going to buy tools, buy good tools so that you can have them the rest of your life. But to buy good tools in woodworking, you're talking about thousands of dollars worth of investment. And you're talking about a lot of heavy equipment. The table saw that I'd like to get is like a Powermatic table saw that I won't go into the details of it, but even used, I've been seeing them on Craigslist for like anywhere from $1,000 to $1,250, but they weigh like 900 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things that, you know, you want to have your shop set up and ready, because mm-hmm. once you put that thing down, it's not going to move for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Woodworking could be on my list. I could see that. What else do you have?
Home brewing.
Okay, that's on my list.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. I definitely should have had sound effects tonight. What was I thinking? Yeah, home brewing. I'd like to do home brewing. Definitely like to learn that. And more, I guess, focused on cider making. I would love to do like more hard ciders and that sort of thing.
We'd like to plant cider apples next year.
Yeah, that's going to be part of the orchard is some cider apple trees. And maybe even put those around the edges. We've been talking recently about the edges of our field area, of our forest, kind of where, you know, zone 3 turns into zone 4, kind of.
Where the pasture meets the woods, kind of.
And there's a lot of edge area there that you can use for a lot of things. And one of the things that we've been talking about is planting beneficials for wildlife, but also as a hedge, but also as an ornamental. So something that we can enjoy, but something that's going to be beneficial to the wildlife. And that's definitely one thing, you know, we've thought about, like apple trees and cider apples, because then it's not necessarily, especially for something like a cider apple, doesn't necessarily need as much maintenance because you don't really care too much about the, you know, worminess and that sort of thing.
That's
and right. So you don't need to have
extra flavor to the cider.
Yeah, that's right. Extra protein. Brewing. This past winter, you got me a couple books on like old school methods.
Herbal healing beers, like old, you know, the old ones where they made them that were actually medicinal usage and that kind of thing.
And meads and
it's a good way to get some extra nutrition in your diet, idea of what you're drinking.
So, and it's just interesting. It's interesting all the different techniques and the different herbs and, you know, the different types of hops and all that stuff. Yeah, it's very interesting. That was on my list. So
and
you have 1 point.
Didn't I get you like the beer something brewer's garden book or something too?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't have anything else except for something geeky.
Something geeky.
I knew there were probably the two that...
Okay.
Because, you know, I have no idea.
Yeah. So. Well, there's a couple things that I want to learn for work, for like web development stuff. But like I said, you know, there's Node.js is one of them, which is just really cool stuff. And then the other thing I really, because Drupal, the content management system I use, is switching to object-oriented programming. And so I need to really, I have my head wrapped around concepts, but I really need to dive into it and work with it. So yeah, object-oriented PHP and... Yeah. You're getting that glazed look in your face. Another geeky one though that is kind of on my list but wasn't in my top five was ham radio.
Oh yeah, that's I'm kind of
interested.
My dad was always big into ham radio.
Yeah, kind of interested in that, just, you know, for various reasons. I just think it's really neat.
Yeah.
Being able to talk to people around the world. And there's a lot of interesting things that are going on in ham right now with actually sharing, you know, internet signals over ham radio, and it's just really, it's neat how it works now, because it's very modern now. You can, with a very low power radio, you can talk around the world because you can actually run the signal through internet relays so that it will pop out on an antenna down in South America, so I don't need a huge rig, you know, to talk to your dad or whatever.
A huge antenna like we had over our house.
Yep.
My grandpa had.
Yep. Yeah, you can do it with just a really small
system. That's how we communicated back when my parents moved down to the jungle.
Isn't that crazy?
In South America, my grandpa had a ham radio and my dad had a ham radio, and they had a standing appointment on Wednesday. I can't remember, it was like 10 o'clock in the morning or no, it would have been in the afternoon because my grandpa worked like first shift. So he was always home. I forget. He was always home around 1, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was maybe like 1 or 2 in the afternoon. So yeah, so I mean, we didn't always get, you know, sometimes you just couldn't get into contact, but other times you could. So we'd all sit around the ham radio and chat with my grandpa in the States.
Yeah, and then what was it? 2 weeks ago, your dad gave a live in the field update to one of the organizations he works with.
Yeah,
via Skype.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. It's crazy the difference 30 years makes.
I used to do phone patches back in the day.
Awesome. So do you want to hear the other things on my list, or do you want to?
Yeah, because I didn't.
I'm surprised that you didn't come up with horseback riding.
Oh, see, no, I wouldn't. I mean, I knew you kind of wanted to do that, but I just didn't think of it as like a, you know, I was thinking more in-depth, long-term skills kind of thing.
Mm. Well, it could be a long-term skill. I don't really, that's the funny thing is I don't really want to own a horse. It's just, and it's not that I want to, you know, go down to the ranch or wherever you go to ride a horse every week or something like that. I just think that that's one of those things that you should know how to do. I don't know why. It's just, it's
You've
like,
never ridden
I watched,
a horse before? Not like at
I don't
camp
think
or anything?
I have ever ridden a horse before. And I just think,
and
it's one of those skills that you should have.
37 years old without riding a horse.
I don't know.
You've been sheltered.
I know. I watched way too many westerns when I was a kid to not want to ride a horse.
Huh.
I think that and get a big silver Colt 45 revolver to put on my
head. We know
head.
Someone that has a horse that's willing to teach you. So we were just down there visiting her last Sunday, and she said, "Well, Brian, when are you going to come?"
Yep.
So,
and
she's looking to get another horse. So
a week and a half before that, she was thrown off the horse and onto a fence.
Yeah. So,
that didn't give me a lot of confidence because her horse isn't that big.
It wasn't her horse though.
Oh,
it was a horse that she was testing out to buy because
I wouldn't buy it.
She wants a companion horse for her horse. So it wasn't her horse.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It was one she was testing out to buy, and you noticed she didn't have a horse. Yeah. Another horse.
So horseback riding is another one. Cider making, we mentioned. I would really like to learn small engine repair.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that in school?
No, I didn't. And I wish I would have.
When I was in 7th grade, we had to. We learned how to take apart a lawnmower engine and put it back together. And that was our final grade as to whether or not we passed the class was if the engine started after we put it back together.
Well, I guess I don't need to learn it then. You already know it.
Yeah, I took it apart, put it back together, and it started, so...
I mean, growing up, I grew up around motorcycles, and so my grandpa and my uncle were always working on, you know, little dirt bikes that we rode. So I understand a lot about you know, small mm-hmm. engines and those types of things. But
well, I've got a lawnmower you can practice on.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is I want to know how to fix those things and how to, and how they work and how, you know, if something's not working, why is it not working? And I know the basics, you know, there's, you got to have a spark from the spark plug. It's, but that's like having a motorcycle.
Right.
That's the first thing you always checked. If it didn't turn over, if it didn't sound like it was kicking, then you check the spark plug, you know, check, make sure it's sparking, check the gap, check, make sure you're getting gas. So I know all of the basics, but I really want to know the internals. excuse me, we actually got a four-wheeler with the house. That was part of the deal that we worked into it. But it needs a lot of love. But we actually have the repair manual or the service manual, you know, like the dealership would have. I started looking through that thing. Man, it's intimidating because they have just every single bolt and washer and, you know, gasket and everything.
There's got to be classes like at the local adult ed, don't you think?
I would think. There probably is for everything that I want to do.
Yeah, you should.
Which, you know, then it's just a matter of time and figuring out when a good time is to go do that. Mm-hmm. But I would really just be able to, I would like to be able to, like, a lawnmower.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of funny because, you know, how much time am I going to end up investing into fixing a lawnmower? When, you know, that, but that's a whole another discussion.
Right. But I love the lawnmower.
Oh, I know you do. If that one ever dies, we're just going to have to replace the engine and, or just take the wheels off.
I am the mower in this family. I love to mow. I always have. I always mowed my parents' yard too. When I was younger, I used the old 1950s Craftsman push mower that my dad used when he was a kid to mow his yard.
Which we still have,
and I love it, and I still used it in Malvern. It comes in really handy for certain applications. I really would like to get that thing, get the wheels fixed, because there's like no tread left on the tires on that thing, which I would love to find someone that could redo the wheels on that for me, because I really do like that. Yeah. Love to mow. I love that mower. It's an old beast, but I've had it for 12, 13 years now. Yeah. And we have a new one, like a new, I don't know, it's like a Troy built, which the self-propel's broken on, but
yeah.
I never liked the new one as much as I like that old one.
And that old one, we got it like Lowe's on clearance. Oh yeah,
it was like $100, and the thing won't start unless you spray carb cleaner, like back behind
the air filter.
The air filter, but...
But once it runs, it'll run all day. It runs
great, yeah, once you can get it started, but if unless you do that, it's not going to start.
Yep.
Dalen, I pulled it out of the garage, and Dalen's like, that one won't start. I said, I can get it to start. And he said, yeah, right. And I said, no, seriously, I can get it to start. And so, you know, I was out mowing with it, and he's like, all right, I came back in because it needed oil. So I asked you where the oil was, and he's like, you didn't get it to start? I said, I got it to start. And he's like, how'd you get it to start? I tried for like a half an hour. I'm like, it's my mower. I know the tricks.
Just got to know the techniques. That's right. And my next one, which kind of goes along with that, well, in a roundabout sort of way, is welding.
I knew that one. Yeah. I'm surprised I didn't remember that.
I'd love to learn how to weld. My grandpa was actually a fabricator in Youngstown when, you know, for his whole life. And when I was in high school, he taught me how to weld, but I only did it probably on maybe one or two projects right around that time, and I haven't done it since. So that was, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, if I had to do it in a pinch, I might be able to possibly pull it off, but I would really like to learn how welding.
I'm gonna play flash dance music whenever you do it.
Nice. Welding is definitely to weld well is an art.
And they do have classes at the local adult.
Yeah.
Education center, I saw.
They're kind of expensive, though, too. So
it's like $300, I think.
But
it's not bad, though.
It's one of those things that...
How much did it cost us to get our trailer welded?
Right, exactly. About $300. Uh-huh. And that was some easy welding that he did, and actually it wasn't really pretty when it was done either. And there's something I want welded onto the trailer frame. And it's just little things like that, that every once in a while there's something that needs done, or an idea that you come up with, and you're just like, you know...
ideas that you can use welding. You should go do it. Because I need some stuff.
I need some metal stuff put together.
Fabrication. I need some stuff fabricated.
And then my last one is one that I would definitely, especially now that we live in the
do like musket this,
now that we live in like the state of lakes and the state of water, there's water everywhere. I would love to learn how to sail. Which is another one that our friends with the horses also sail. They have a just like a little catamaran, which I would like. That's what I would like, is a little. My friends, again, when I was in high school, they had Hobie Cats, like little catamarans, probably like 15 foot, you know, just little things, just for fun. No big yachts or any crazy stuff like that. Just going out and tooling around on the lake. And I just remember it being so much fun when I was a kid. And I would love, I just think that'd be, again, it's just one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's like horseback riding. It's one of those things that I just really, I don't know when I would ever have the time to do it or the, you know, but I just, man, that would just
it's
be
like
fun.
Things on your bucket list.
Kind of. Yeah, definitely. Huh. But there's, I mean, with Lake St. George, that's a huge lake and it's right up, it's 4 miles up the road. And there's just lakes all over the place up here that we could go. I mean, well, I could, because I think you'd enjoy it. Because I mean, you're moving the whole time, so you wouldn't
problem
get.
Problem is, I get seasick. So.
Well, yeah, but you only when you stop. You've said that before. And it's not the sea, it's a lake.
Yeah. I get lake sick on Lake Erie.
Well, that's a big lake, though, too.
I've checked many times in Lake Erie.
Fed the fish on many occasions.
Many, many occasions.
Chumming the water. All right, so that was my list. Welding, small engine repair, cider making or beer making, horseback riding, and sailing. And then ham rodeo, Node.js, and possibly some object-oriented programming. So, on to yours.
Yeah.
Let's see. The first one I have for you, or the first one that I guessed for you is, and this might be like three items, but they all kind of go together. Butchery, which also may include, but may be separately, charcuterie.
Yeah. Salumiering.
Is that one of yours?
That is definitely one of mine. Traditional European butchering. Mm-hmm. So, like, I found a guy locally, and unfortunately, I just missed a class where some famous French butchers came in and taught a 2 or 3 day class, like 7 miles from our house. Of course, I had no idea and find out about it a month later. But, but the guy whose farm that they taught at, he knows this kind of butchery. And so I've been conferring with him about. Coming down here this, you know, late fall, early winter, when we slaughter our pigs, and either having a class here, like having an on-farm class here when we butcher our pigs, and they'll be like the teaching pigs or whatever, or having him just come down and do a class with just the two of us and teach us how to do that. So, yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. That's something I definitely want to learn, and I've read a ton about it. And I'm pretty sure I could, you know, I'm not afraid to sacrifice a ham to try to do it myself. And I did make my own bacon last year, which was very tasty. But yeah, I would love to do all that kind of stuff. I would specifically like to be able to butcher my own pigs. You know, I really have no desire to butcher a cow necessarily or any of that, but pigs for some reason, and making bacon and smoking and making prosciutto and hams and that kind of stuff, I really find fascinating, and I've read a ton about it and definitely would like to do it. But back in Ohio, being able to find a butcher that was willing to, you know, the butcher I bought a half a hog from a friend, and they were willing to give me the belly to make bacon. So I picked up that the day they butchered it, but you know, they weren't really willing to give me the leg to cure the ham myself, which is understandable, I suppose.
Well, and we talked about it too. I mean, butchers, obviously they have to have a balance between what they can charge and the time that they have and everything else. So they just want to sort of get it done and move on to the next one so that, because it's a volume business.
And it was a small local butcher shop, and they were great. But I'm pretty excited about the contact that I made here, because he does the old style butchery, not like the normal. So you cut along the muscle lines and you're able to retain more of like the structure of the meat. yeah, I'm kind of excited about that.
So if anybody's interested in that and wants to attend a class,
yeah, let me
and you
know,
want to come see Maine in the fall, it's a beautiful time to come up here.
I'm assuming it's going to be, we don't have a walk-in cooler, so we're going to have to schedule it once the weather cools down, you know, so maybe early November might be a good time. Mm-hmm. I'm working with the guy to try to figure out when it might work out best to figure out what kind of, I'm going to have to buy some equipment.
Mm-hmm.
To do it, which isn't a big deal, because if I want to learn how to do it and do it in the future, I'm gonna have to have the equipment anyway. So
right.
My biggest issue is a scalding tank, but
can figure out something for that.
Yeah, and a smoker, we want to build the smoker anyway, so it gives
that's
us
my
good...
second one. No, do you consider that part of your...
I consider it part of this kind of...
Well, dang.
But...
then I only have one for you.
But yeah,
that's my next
but
one was
smoking meats,
smoking
also
meats
kind
and
of...
like cheeses and everything else.
Definitely, that's something I've been interested in for a really long time.
So yeah, we're probably going to build a smoker this summer or fall so that we can try to smoke hams and meats and venison and cheeses and just different things. 'Cause
I love the smoked anything.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like building a smoker is that complicated. There are tons of plans online.
I mean, when you read Laura Ingalls Wilder, they just used a hollow tree.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah. And so, Hugh in River Cottage just put a little door in his chimney.
Right. Yep.
So, and that worked for him. But yeah, so a smoker. I think that's included in the whole butchery.
Well, right. I'm going to count it as two. So I have 2 points.
All right.
But that's all I have for you. That's all. I could not. I don't know why. I had another one the other day, but I don't think that it was very valid. So what are your other ones?
Was it wood oven cooking, like building a mud oven and cooking in it?
No.
Because that's something I'm really interested in, something I really want to do. I really want to build a mud oven and just learn how to bake my bread specifically, but cook other stuff in it. Wood-fired oven cooking.
Pizza.
And making, I really want to do that. I almost built one in Ohio. I had a friend that was all... gung-ho to come help me. We're going to harvest the mud off our front hillside because we had this front hillside in Ohio that was just clay. I mean, the perfect clay for that. So we could have harvested the clay right there and made our own mud oven, but I can probably come across some clay here in Maine, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, Joan was saying that she had a local source of it because she does pottery.
Yeah.
So we'll have to talk to her. Yep. Of course, I don't know. How much clay do you need for a mud oven?
I don't know, but I bet we can find some on our property. Look at the soil maps and see.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that.
But that really actually wasn't, that one wasn't on my official list. I was just asking because if that's something you had thought about.
Well, that is. I mean, I guess that's...
that's something I've been
talking something
about
you
for
wanna
years.
Do. See, the way I was thinking of it, this was more of like... skills, sort of. So I wasn't thinking necessarily in the direction of building a mud oven, but okay. Yeah, I could definitely see that one.
All right. So another skill, I would love to learn how to make silage.
Yeah,
I don't know how you didn't guess that one.
That was not on my list at all.
The whole concept of silage, you know, with the adding some molasses and everything fermenting, and it's like sauerkraut for your livestock.
Mm-hmm.
The whole process is incredibly fascinating to me. We watched that show Wartime Farm, and they made it on there, and it's always been really interesting to me, and I would love to make some, so maybe I'll read up on it and try to make up a batch this fall and see what happens, but it's kind of really interesting to
me. The way they did it on Wartime Farm was pretty easy, too. They just galvanized silo, right? And then they just put the stuff in there. They squished it down. They put molasses on top of it. I think that was all they did. We'll have to go back and watch that again. What we need to find is an old silo somewhere that somebody will part out to us. They don't really have many silos up here.
No, they don't. They're not a big green growing region. There are tons back in Ohio.
I'm sure we can come up
with something.
Yeah, we'll figure out something.
I don't know. That's something I find really fascinating.
Interesting. Yeah.
I figured you wouldn't guess that one.
So give me another one I wouldn't have guessed.
Laying hedgerows. Like the traditional hedgerows, like the way the English do it, where they cut parts of the trees, but not all the way through, and they lay it over. And it's, I mean, a really beautiful art form. I I love seeing pictures of it, and I've watched, you know, a couple videos on it and stuff and read a ton about it. And the whole thing is just really fascinating. Yeah, I really love the idea of a hedgerow and hedgerows, and I really want to incorporate them here. They won't be like the cut one where you cut the trees and lay them down necessarily. I don't know. I may go for that. But I'm in the process of selecting the species of plants and nut-bearing shrubs and fruit, you know, like small fruit trees and things that I want to incorporate into the hedgerow that goes around kind of like our main pasture garden area kind of thing. Yeah,
they did that in one of the seasons of River Cottage.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The TV show. And it was because Hugh had a bunch of huge trees outside of his house. And I can't remember what they were.
I can't either.
What variety or species they were. But at any rate, he had a guy come in that in a day, basically.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah, turned this
it's definitely a skill.
Just mess of a trees into this beautiful hedgerow and said, you know, I'll need to come back in about 5 to 10 years to clean it up. And
it's definitely a pipe dream because I'm pretty sure it's probably something I'm never going to be able to learn how to do unless I go to England or something. But that's you don't see
it
here.
I
think it's, I love it.
I bet there's,
I would really love to kind of learn that and like espaliering trees. Mm-hmm. That's something I really want to do. I never had a space for the trees in Ohio. There was absolutely nowhere I could put espaliered trees, but I have lots of space here. So I'm definitely going to be starting those next spring.
And we went to a greenhouse a couple weeks ago before we picked up our friend. They had two espaliered trees that they were using as almost like a gate to the garden, which was really cool. They had them so that they were almost forming a wall that was the main entrance to the garden. So that was really neat. It would be neat to go back to that place and see them, you know, now that
see
all the leaves are out.
Leafed out, yeah.
Everything's in full bloom. Yeah. So, but yeah, espaliered trees are really cool. When you go to, if any of you have ever been to,
Longwood Gardens?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's funny because I could think of Kennett Square. I could think of like, you know, and everything about it except for the name of it. If you ever go to Longwood Gardens, they have espaliered fruit trees in the front door, which is just really neat. I like how they have that set up. Yeah. It's a great, like...
They have a few different places.
Before you even walk in, you're like, wow, these are really cool.
Yeah, they have some really neat ones there.
All right, so give me another one.
Mushroom foraging.
I was going to put that down. Oh, I should have put it down. I knew that. Yeah.
I mean, I know a little bit. You know, I know the morels. We did that. Oyster mushrooms, that kind of thing. But turkey tails. But I would definitely love to be able to do more of that. It's, I mean, now that we've had, you know, 6 inches of rain in the last 5 days, it's the perfect time to go out looking. So I hope I can find some time to go out this week and look around. But yeah, that's definitely something I would love to do more of for sure and learn a lot more because it's one of those things, you know, you have the books and you're pretty sure, you know, but you just really like to have someone that teaches you. So I need to look up some local foraging. There's a guy that does them. I just need to figure out. It's hard to figure out when all this stuff happens sometimes.
Right.
We were talking about how there needs to be a master calendar that has all this information on it, but seems like I always find out about stuff after it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a master calendar of events in the area. Because like those guys right down the road that are doing butchering, which is something that you've been interested in for a while. It's not something that just came along because we got pigs. So yeah, if you'd known about that, you definitely would have attended.
I definitely would have taken it. Yeah,
so
for sure. But he's doing a duck one later that I'll probably do, even though I'm pretty... I've done a duck, and it's like a chicken.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I portion up chickens all the time, and it's not once you know the anatomy and know it's. But who knows what I'll learn? Maybe some interesting tips for getting rid of those pesky feathers. But
that would be worth the price of admission alone.
That's right.
All right.
All right. So, my last one is going to be keeping a dairy cow.
Really?
Yep.
Really?
I'd like to do that sometime. I don't know if I'd like to do it all the time, but I wouldn't mind doing it sometime.
Huh.
I was fast. Well, you know how you hear all of the things. It's like, you can't keep your rabbits on pasture because they get sick. You hear all these things about keeping a dairy cow, how you can never leave and you're tied down to twice a day milkings. Well, the farm in Ohio did once a day milking. So, you know, you can do once a day milking. But then I was reading a book by Gene Lotchin, and he talked about the way he did his dairy cow. And he did it in such a way that after he only had to be around for, I think, the first month. And then after that, it was only like every other day that he milked. But it was fascinating because he didn't have to do it all the time. And I loved his system, whether or not it's super practical or not. I mean, clearly it's been working for him for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's nice when you read stuff like that, that you're kind of like, oh, maybe I could try this, you know? Yeah. Maybe it's not a year of having to be home every single day or find someone that's willing to come milk your cow when you're when you're gone. But, yeah, so that's something I'd really like to do.
It would be nice for keeping the grass mowed.
Certainly. After and getting milk out of it.
Right.
I would like to have a cow sometime.
After 6 days of 6 inches of rain,
the grass is like knee high.
A jungle out there. So we need to tackle that this week. But
and then you get all the chickens that are roaming around and adding their nitrogen to the mix.
Fertilizing.
And so the grass is just ridiculous. I really do wish we had some sheep or something that could eat the grass and turn it into something beneficial for us so that we didn't have to spend all the time mowing and, you know, use gas and maintain mowers and all that other stuff.
Which we wouldn't, but the ticks are kind of bad around here.
Right, we want to keep it mowed. We're keeping it mowed shorter, kind of right around the house as like a lawn. And then, you know, the outskirts, like the pasture area, we have a brush hog on the tractor that we'll use, maybe once a month or 6 weeks or something like that. But it's pretty crazy. So.
Yep. So a milk cow,
Yeah.
I know that you've always wanted a Scottish Highland.
Yeah.
But
I do want to. That's on my list, but yeah. I don't know. I definitely want Scottish Highland cows.
Huh. I never would have. Well, it's not that I never would have thought of a milk cow, but I'd
like to have a milk cow.
I thought before that maybe goats or something else, but.
I think I'd rather do a milk cow than goats.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind doing sheep. A couple sheep. But I like the idea of a cow better.
Hmm. Interesting.
I hear if, it's, you know, goats are great, I hear. But goats are also belligerent. They can be belligerent.
Yeah.
I can see how they would be trying.
They don't like to stay in their fences.
Yeah. And their neighbors down the street. Proof. Is in the pudding there too. I mean,
every time you drive by their goats are not in their fence.
Yeah. And they even have electric fence.
Yeah.
And I like when we interviewed Dawn, she said they've had some goats. I don't know if they're milking goats, but they've always had some pet goats. Their boys have. She said she likes a cow because you milk one animal and it's done and then you get a lot of milk. So it's like a lot of bang for your buck as far as milk is concerned, which I would like because we do drink a lot of milk. So
those are our five things. And so we want to open this up to all of you listeners too.
Yeah.
All of our friends out there in the cyber worlds. So go to the comments and leave your list of five things. What's the five things that you want to learn? And it's always funny because usually when Susie and I do these little fun exercises, usually it's on a road trip when we need something to talk about to stay awake. But usually when we do these exercises, there's always something in there that either triggers something or plants a little seed in the back of our brain that's like, yeah, I need to do that. And then the next day or two, you know, one of us will be surfing the internet for a class on how to learn one of these things. How to make silage.
Yeah.
How do you make silage?
Pigs. I want to keep pigs.
Yeah.
I want to keep pigs. Oh, my friend just got pigs. Oh, I'm going to call the farm she got her figs from and see if they've got any more pigs left. Oh, they've got pigs left. I'm going to call them. Well, Dalen's going to go get pigs on Wednesday.
Next thing you know, we have pigs. So that's usually how it works with us. But yeah, we'd like to hear what your five things are too. And who knows, maybe some of the things that you guys say will inspire us to learn one of those as well.
Yeah, I'd like to learn soap making too.
Yes. That's one of the ones you thought. Yes, actually, that is the one I thought of, was soap making.
I have most of the supplies. I just need to buy, I think, a few more things, and I'd like to whip up a batch of soap.
Our friend back in Ohio, Heather, when we went back to visit her, she made us some anise soap, and it was when she gave it to us, I was kind of like, oh,
anise, great,
great,
because filling up his ills every time I shower.
You'd be trying to eat it, and I don't really like licorice.
Of Italian weddings.
Yeah, but it was actually awesome. It was great. I loved it. Every time we took a shower,
anise.
Yeah, it was really.
I like anise flavor too. I don't like licorice. Isn't that weird?
That you like the flavor, but you don't
like licorice and like black licorice. But licorice is slightly different than anise, I think.
Well, personally, there's probably no anise in it at all.
There is a licorice.
No, I know. I'm saying, though, in like liquor, like Twizzlers.
Oh, I'm licorice. Sure there wasn't any real licorice in Twizzlers. Do they even sell licorice Twizzlers anymore?
Oh, I'm sure. Nice. I don't know. It's been a while since I've bought Twizzlers or especially licorice flavored ones. I'm sure they do, though. I'm sure a quick Amazon search would reveal that. But yeah, we want to hear about your five things.
Licorice comes from the licorice, the Glycyrrhiza glabra plant, the root.
Is that the anise plant?
Not botanically related to anise, star anise, or fennel.
So anise fennel just has
a little bit of anise, like a licorice. But it's not the same as licorice, because I don't like licorice, but I do like anise a lot, and I love anise pizzelles, and I love fennel, too. Licorice? I can't handle licorice.
That's interesting. To be perfectly honest, I always thought they were the same thing. I thought licorice and anise. I thought anise flavoring was in licorice. I thought that's where licorice got its flavoring. I didn't know it was something different. You learn something new every day.
It's an herbaceous perennial. It looks pretty.
So the last week, the title of the show was Everybody to the Limit, which a lot of people got the Homestar Runner reference.
Right
and of
away.
Course, yeah.
If you're a Homestar Runner fan, it triggers like that.
So we wanted to, because a lot of people then said stuff in the comments, in the show notes. So we just wanted to say that was pretty funny, that we enjoyed
really
that.
Funny.
What's your favorite Homestar Runner moment?
Dr. Professional. Marzipan's answering machine.
Yeah. When Strong Bad called.
You're going to die.
So
I'm sorry, you have very, very few.
Why don't you take everything out to the curb and...
Somebody.
Somebody will be by to pick it up.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I also like Trogdor.
Oh, yeah.
Burninating the universe.
Yep. That was so much fun.
Oh, yeah, we used to watch that all the time.
Yep. So yeah, we just wanted to say that.
Oh, it's funny.
It was funny.
It is. Their comments were cracking me up reading them.
So around the run, let's talk a little bit about what we've been doing this past week, and we've kind of hinted at a few things. We talked about the pigs. We swapped out. I worked all day today and part of yesterday on the chicken coop. We want to make some modifications. Actually, we just want to rebuild the chicken coop. So this is all kind of
a hot mess.
This is all stopgap solutions.
Yeah. The chicken coop is just, I hate it. And so does our neighbor who comes up and checks on our chickens when we're gone. It's just bad design after bad design with a little bit more bad design added onto it. And so it's just, I mean, it's nothing but frustration when you go in there. I mean, then the chickens don't care, but you know, you can't hardly clean it. You can't get the door open because of the way it's made, and it's falling apart, and the nesting boxes were just kind of popped on the wall, like right in your face when you walked in,
and the chicken they were inside the coop, so the chickens would sit on top and poop all over the top of them.
They didn't have the angled top, and then there had been they'd never cleaned out. I don't think the nesting boxes, you know, when an egg breaks in there, and so there was no lip on it anymore, so you couldn't keep any kind of shavings or anything in it because it just had years of built up.
Nasty
eggs, broken eggs, and just nastiness. So, yeah.
So I rerouted.
We'll be burning those.
Yeah, I rerouted a lot of the electric. Actually, I ripped out all the electric and redid it. So
and
that
there was
now,
no light. That's another thing.
There
and
was
the
a light,
is,
but it was on a pole. It was one
but
of those.
It was
pole
on a timer.
Ones. Yeah, but it was hooked up to the timer.
So you have to have the timer going, and the light turned off, and happened to be up there.
Yeah.
Like, and if you want to look, so I'd go up to, you know, count the chickens at night, and there's like two tiny windows in the coop, so you can't see anything. And if I didn't have a flashlight, I'd be like, you know, moving around, trying to count the silhouettes of the chickens if it was dark by the time I got up there. So yeah, it'll be really nice to flip on the light if I happen. Usually I'm up there, you know, at like 6, and I can. It's still dark at 6. I mean, it's dark in that coop in the daytime. You can't hardly see in there.
And I took out the timer that was in there because we did some reading about Gene Lodgson. Wasn't he the one that said about the chickens and about putting a light
really
on them?
Yeah, we didn't really have a light on for him. Didn't put a light on for him in the winter anyways, so.
Yeah. So we took out the timer. We put in the light on a switch. So now you can walk in and flip a switch and lights actually come on. And then left a...
An outlet
on the wall for the water heater and just for, you know, if you need anything else up there. Mm-hmm. And then put in new nesting boxes. So now instead of two crap-filled nesting boxes...
crap-caked.
We now have 6 nesting boxes that hang on the outside of the coop. So that opened up a lot of room on the inside. And... you can collect the eggs from the outside now, so you
which
don't have to
nice.
Go inside the coop in order to collect eggs, which will be really nice. And there's still a couple modifications that need done to it. Like you said, the door doesn't open, and the reason the door doesn't open is the door goes down to the floor. And so if you put shavings in there, and then the chickens get around and scratch in the shavings.
And they always scratch in the shavings, and then they mound it up in front of the door, so then you have to be,
like bulldoze
give the door
in.
A couple of swift kicks to try to get in there.
And the door is not... you know, it was ill-conceived as well, so it's kind of rickety and...
falling off its hinges.
Yeah, especially from pushing the shavings.
This is the interior, like, screen door, kind of, because there's an exterior door, too. And the coop needs a little bit more venting. While it's an old kind of shed building and it has cracks between the walls, it's kind of surrounded... it's in this, like, shady, damp, dank area of the garden, so there's just no air movement up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of... we need to cut down some trees and
there's just a lot of things that need to happen to it. So what really needs to be done is we need to build a new one.
Right.
Which we will at some point, in the near future, probably within the next year. And we've been talking about the plans for that. But speaking of plans, one of the things I'm trying to do is to draw things in Google SketchUp now. And I actually did plans for the nesting boxes in Google SketchUp. So if anybody is interested in them, I will be uploading the file to the show notes. And you can download Google SketchUp, which is free. And then you can open up our nesting boxes and see our chickens. Well, not really.
You should have put a little chicken in there.
Yeah. But it's a decent design. I like the design. I like how it worked out. And we basically, in the space that we had 2 nesting boxes... we could now fit 3 in there external, so it's
well,
super nice.
6 actually.
Well, now there's 6, yeah, but
right,
because we expanded
which we
out
need
the space
because
a little bit.
The chickens were always fighting over the nesting boxes, and you know, they'd every now and then there'd be a nest on the floor where they just, you know, you'd go up in there and there'd be 2 chickens in each nesting box and other ones like waiting on the front pecking at them and they'd be throwing each other out and eggs would get broken.
Sometimes you'd go up there and 2 chickens are sitting in one box.
Yeah, and it was just a mess because they just needed more. There just needs to be more boxes, so.
Another thing that we noticed this week is that, and this kind of leads into this discussion, because we, well, to back into it, we now have a broody guinea. One of our guineas went broody and started sitting on a little clutch of eggs.
Big clutch of eggs.
In the corner.
Like 16.
But the interesting thing about this guinea we noticed this past week is that she has...
No toes.
No toes. We didn't notice this until this week because when we picked them up, in the chaos of it all, you don't really get a good look at them.
No.
And then... They were always in this coop, the way it's designed. We kind of cordoned off the back room, which used to be the storage room, and now it's right. Part of the coop.
But it's
as
dark.
Their room, but it's super dark. There's no light back in there.
You
there's no windows.
See.
There's nothing. So, which we felt bad about, but anyway, they're not stuck back there anymore because now they just come out with
the
chickens.
They were just there for
to get used to the chickens. So now they're...
But she was always walking around inside the coop with the shavings.
Right.
So,
and then she was
really
always walking around
toes.
For like the first week or so
She's
that we
really
let them out.
And would run away.
And they would be in the woods.
Yeah.
So we never saw her feet. And then the other day, Susie's like, there's something wrong with that guinea. Look at the way it's walking. Wait a minute. She has no toes. She's just got like...
Little nubs.
Little...
But she walks around. She's out with the other guineas.
She roosts. I mean,
yeah,
she gets up on the roost.
She gets up
and,
on the roost and roosts
which
with the
I
other
do not
guineas.
Know
I have
how
no idea
she
how
does
she
that.
Roosts, but I mean, clearly she never has had any because she's perfectly
adapted
to not having them. But yeah, I mean,
it's just interesting.
It's
but now
animals
she's
really are amazing. She's broody. She's the one that went broody now, so she's hanging out. She's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in there today, of course, working and going by her a lot as I was tearing out the electric and all
the
wiring.
Did she puff up
at you or? Oh, yeah. She was putting out her wings and kind of shaking them a little bit. And, yeah.
I won't get that anymore. I used to get that, but then, I talked to her and give her some food. And then, so now she just kind of looks at me.
I think she got used to me after a while. I think she didn't really want to bother with me anymore.
She kind of hisses at you too, like opens up her beak and. That's
and
funny.
On the topic of the guineas, too, we lost a guinea this week.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, yesterday, the night before, we thought all of them were in the coop. And guineas actually are...
I thought I counted them all.
Our neighbors down below have guineas and have had guineas. And a lot of times, one of them will stay out overnight.
Right.
And they'll just roost in a tree and it's no big deal. Yeah. But we had one... You discovered it the next morning that she wasn't in there, right?
Yeah.
Because
I thought I counted her the night before.
Mm-hmm. And obviously not, because she was out, and we couldn't find her the next morning either. And I said, well, just wait until you let the others out, and then they'll start running around and squawking, and then they'll find her. Well, about an hour later, you found her about 15 feet behind the coop, just laying on the ground dead, so... That was kind of sad and disappointing, and
I think she just may have gotten like hypothermia because there's something about this color of guinea. We know I've noticed it.
Yeah,
it's been raining for the past week.
They're the lavender ones,
and they're something about their feathers. They're like not waterproof or something, because the other guineas look completely fine. They have a little bit of wet, like in their undercarriage, but these two lavender ones would just be drenched. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would just look like. Wet cats, the poor things, look terrible. So we think that maybe it might have had something to do with that because it's been getting pretty chilly at night.
Yeah.
So maybe she ended up staying outside and it just got too cold for her. I mean, I don't know. That's kind of our guess because it wasn't predator.
No, she didn't have any marks on her.
So that's what we're assuming.
So that was kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's disappointing. I guess sad isn't the right word because it's disappointing because you put... time and energy into the animals, and then...
But oddly enough, all of our other guineas are acting much better now that she's gone,
which is really weird.
I wonder if she was the instigator.
I don't know.
But anyways, they're quite much quieter now.
Yeah.
And much more, they stay in a group now, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because they didn't before. Her, that lavender one, and then the pearl one we have would go off together. And we've got this pearl one that she's crazy. We got her from a friend. She's not part of like this group. She came separately and she was driving our friend crazy, which is why she gave her to us, but her mate had been killed. So, but yeah, she's really crazy.
So she stole, but now she seems to be better.
She seems way better.
Wow. And I think that was about it. The chicks that we got from our neighbor Matt are getting
huge.
Pretty big.
They're going out. We got them an electric fence. And Dalen built them a movable coop. So after tonight's the last night, they're on the back porch because we didn't have the electric fence. And the movable coop is, you know, it's not, it's a movable coop. So it's not completely predator proof, but the electric fence is predator proof pretty much.
Yeah.
You know. So,
we're going to get that hooked up tomorrow.
So, we're going to get that hooked up tomorrow, and then we're going to put them out there, and they're going to move outside. And it's supposed to be a little warmer. It's a little cold. They're almost fully feathered, but they're still clustering up a little bit. I don't know. I put a heat lamp out there, and they clustered up in the corner of the coop, not under the lamp. So, I mean, I don't think they're that cold, but whatever. They're starting to roost, though, so they're kind of cute because they're just these, you know. They're like miniature chickens almost because they're getting almost 100% fully feathered and they're roosting on their little roosts and they're just so funny. And I let them out. They kind of, I've had them contained in this little fence by their coop. And one of them realized today they've always stayed inside the little fence, even though they could totally fly over the fence without a problem. One of them decided today to fly up and land on top of the fence and roost on it. And then it was like, oh, I can just hop off this other side. And then once he did it, every single one of them had to get up and roost on the fence. So I was like, there's no keeping them in now. So I took the fence down and they spent like 2 hours this evening running around in a little area around their movable coop and having a blast. It seemed like scratching around. And so I'm kind of excited to put up the big fence and give them a bigger area to run around in.
Well, it's been difficult because you've been moving them in and off
the back porch
for, what, almost a month now?
Yeah.
Getting close to it. So it'll be nice just to put them outside and leave them out there and let them kind of get established out there. So.
Yep.
So I think that's about it, though. I feel like we did a lot
more
this week.
We talked about the pigs earlier, but yeah. It's been raining, so we haven't done a ton.
Yeah, it has been raining a ton.
I need to go check, but I think around 6 or 7 inches of rain.
Yeah, in the last
five days, yeah.
So we're kind of drowned right now. Everything is just soggy and
wet. This morning I was just like, oh, no more rain, please. Yeah. It's just...
And it rained all day while
I was
working on the coop. You just
feel like everything is soaked.
And we actually started a fire this morning. It got it was 60 degrees in the house when we woke up this morning. So we started
one last night too, didn't we?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We continued it this morning, I should say.
We've actually had a fire, I think, 3 days this past week.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. All our friends are complaining about turning on their air conditioning and
of course it got cold back in Ohio too.
Yeah.
Everybody's complaining about frost on their windows, so. So the last thing we're going to share tonight, of course, is Brian's Geeky Corner. And this week it's a quick one, but one that I use all the time. And I don't think I've talked... Have I talked about Skitch before?
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Well, if I haven't... just as a tip as to when you can use this or when you can use this tip, taking screenshots is sometimes a good idea, especially when you... make a purchase online and before you get an email confirmation or an email receipt, if you take a screenshot of the, you know, it always says print this page and, you know, for your records or whatever, which nobody, either you're not near a printer, you're not hooked up to a printer, you're out of the black ink, whatever it is, you don't want to do that, but you can take a screenshot. And how you do that on a Mac, if you don't have a program for it, is with, Command-Shift-3? Command-Shift-4.
Yeah.
And then that'll give you crosshairs that you can drag across the screen to indicate which section of the screen you want to capture. But if you want a little bit better experience or you want to be able to mark it up, you can get a program called Skitch, which is free. And it's actually part of Evernote, which I talked about before. And whenever you can actually set it up that whenever you do a Skitch screenshot, it automatically uploads to Evernote, which is kind of nice because then you don't have to worry about saving it or whatever. The neat thing about Skitch, though, is you can actually draw then on those pictures. So I use this a lot when I'm working with web designs or want to show somebody something or draw attention to something. You can take a screenshot of something and then you can draw colored arrows or text or circle something and then send that picture either, you know, via email or throw it into a Dropbox and send that off to someone. And it's great when I'm working on websites and want to point something out to someone, I can just circle it, put that into the Dropbox, and that takes care of it. But then I said, you know, another benefit is that you can set it up so that it uploads to your Evernote account. So then for receipts, let's say, if you want to save a receipt of something that you bought, you can just do a screen grab of it, and then that uploads it to Evernote. You can tag it as, you know, receipt for whatever, and there it is, and it will always be there. So it's kind of a neat little program. It's free, which is a big bonus.
Oh,
it's
nice.
And like I said, ties into to Evernote, which is cool too. So Sketch, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes so that you can find that and all the other things that we talked about today, including the books and links to the Amazon affiliate account. There's also, of course, links to donate if you want to in the sidebar. We got a new weekly donor, or a new monthly donor this past week, so that's a huge help. And if you do want to donate to the podcast, you can do that by going to cultivatesimple.com and or chiotsrun.com, and you'll see in the sidebar links to donate. And you can either donate monthly, which is a reoccurring, you know, $5, $10, $20 a month donation, whatever value you get out of the show and you want to give some value back to us. That's the value to value proposition, or value for value proposition. Or you can simply use our Amazon affiliate link. Whenever you buy something off Amazon, give us a few pennies each time and it helps to pay the bills. You can also go over to iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars. And that would be really nice as well. So like we said, this was kind of a different show. We're just kind of talking a little bit about some different things that we want to learn. And we want you to leave what you want to learn in the show notes.
Because it's fun to dream.
It is.
And think about it. It keeps your life exciting, I think, to, you know, it's constantly a process for us. There are always like 15 things on my list that I want to learn. And when I check one off, there's another one that ends up making it on the list.
So it quickly takes over.
It's good. I know people that have never learned how to do anything new, it seems like, in their entire adult life. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine how boring that would be.
Well, and it's, as we talked about before on the show, it's like my grandma that always complained about not having blueberry plants.
Yeah, or, you know, never blueberries,
but never planted them. Yep. You know, and she's been complaining about it for 10 years. So if she
would have just complained about it ever since we've been married, so 15 years.
So if she'd have just been,
she would have planted them 15 years ago. She would have been enjoying blueberries for the last 12.
Yeah. So just go out and learn something. That's our encouragement this week. And just
plus, you meet lots of great new people.
Yeah.
I mean, you meet so many interesting people when you learn how to do this. It gives you the ability to talk to a wider variety of people,
mm-hmm,
knowledgeably about things. You can connect with a lot more people on a, you know, if you have something in common with something, it's much easier to have a in-depth conversation with them. So, you know, and as an introvert, I'm all about that and getting rid of the fluff in conversation. So that's one of the reasons I like to learn a lot of new things, is mm-hmm, just because then it gives me the ability to be able to speak with a lot more people.
That's right. And just one final note before we sign off. This coming week, on May 30th, Susie and I are celebrating our 15-year anniversary.
Yeah, think of that.
And so I just wanted to say that it's been a great 15 years.
Yeah, it has.
And thank you very much. We don't really celebrate
no,
holidays or anniversaries or birthdays or anything that much, because we really feel
every day
is a celebration. And we try to appreciate each other every day. And so, but it's just, 15 years is kind of one of those big milestones,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, what's the gift you're supposed to get at 15?
I don't know. Paper? Wood? Is it wood?
I don't know. This could be a new chicken coop.
Is that what it is? Let's see. 15-year anniversary gift. Let's see. This is good radio right here.
Mm.
Crystal.
Ugh.
So the modern
anniversary is a glass watch. And watch. Travel anniversary, yeah. Switzerland and Austria. Crystal, that's dumb. Last year was ivory. Isn't that illegal?
Probably. That's probably an old list, though. But anyway, that's...
Well, I like 11 is steel.
Steel?
We should pretend it's 10 11.
10 was 10.
That's a good one.
But I just wanted to say thanks for 15 years. It's been fun.
Who would have thought?
My friend asked this past week. I went to college with him, and now I work with him doing websites. And he said, did you think back when we were on... on our college dorm, he said, did you think that any of this would have ever happened, or did you see yourself, you know, where you are? I'm like, man, I could never have seen any of this. I mean, just all the adventures that we've been on and all the stuff that we've done, it's just crazy. And I'm excited. I'm excited about the next 50 years and what it's going to bring and all the adventures we're going to do.
I'm sure all the 5 things we each talked about today will be checked off the list, and there will be other things.
And when we're 85 years old and we're doing podcast episode number 3000.
We'll be podcast then. No. We'll have like Google teeth. Everything's just put on the internet. That's right.
So anyway, happy anniversary. I love you.
Me too.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountain sides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now. Somehow it all depends. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the trees, and oh, to fly. I'd rather see my hometown. I'd rather hold my wife. I'd rather never question things. That's the story of my life. I'd rather not be crying. I'd rather just be whole. I'd rather brave the cleansing fire. I'd rather feed my soul. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the tree. Open to suggestions, I'm crying out to you. I'm ready to be finished here. I'm ready for this season to be through. If I could fly up.
to ride this wind above the trees, and oh, to fly away from here, come and face the longing.